Okay, let's start. So in the last class, we looked over how to build a direct map cache, and then we introduced that when we have direct map cache, it could happen that there are multiple blocks which map to the same set, and they cause a conflict miss. And in order to solve that problem, we introduced that we can have set associative cache, where we, instead of just having one column of blocks, we have multiple of them, and each column is called a way. So if a cache is E-way set associative, usually there should be, so there would be always E columns in our cache. So now instead of having just one specific slot where all the blocks with the same index can go, now we have multiple positions for them. So direct map is in the one extreme where for each block there is only just one place. And then we start adding associativity. So for each set we are having multiple positions. So you can think about, okay, can we go to the full extreme? And that is actually our fully associative cache, where there is just one set, and all the blocks in our cache belongs to that set. So here we have the highest flexibility in where we want to put our block. Within one set, we can place them in any place we want. But the disadvantage is now we have more complexity, because for each lookup we have to read all the tags, compare all of them against the tag that we have in our address, so it requires more logic to do the comparison and the moxie. So said associative cache is a middle ground in between direct map and fully associated. Then we looked into, if we have a direct map cache, how should we split the address into tag, index, and offset? And this was similar to what we have seen for direct map cache. If we want to know how many bits we need to index the bytes within a block, which is the block offset, we actually look at the size of the block. If it's B, if we can convert it to 2 to the power, then we get the number of bits we need to indicate the location of the byte that we are trying to look up in our cache block. Then if we want to know how many bits we want for our index, we look at the number of sets and we take the power of 2 of that and get the number of bits. And rest of the address bits, those are tags. And there was one difference here, which is what's the total size of the cache. And whenever we are saying total size of the cache, it's always the data array. So we will not include the metadata that we need for valid bits and tag bits. And that is basically the number of sets we have multiplied by total size of a block. And then we have multiple ways within each set. So that's why we actually have to multiply it with the associativity. So this one is different because before there were no extra ways, there was just one way. So for direct map cache, E was 1 and it became B into S. So now we will do some exercise that given some cache configuration, So for example, these are real numbers for some specific cache configuration. And we want to determine what is the number of bits for offset, index, and tag. So here we have all the formulas that you need. And now we have three cache configuration, L1, L2, and L3. And what I want you to do is, given this information, try to figure out number of bits for offset, index, and tag for each of these configurations. And again, you can talk to your neighbors, discuss, and after that, I guess we will match our results. So maybe you will have 5 minutes. So you can see that the number, the size of the block is same in all cache levels. So that one should be easy. Like, how many bits do we need for offset if our cache block is 64 byte involved here? So I guess here is the formula. No volunteer? This is the easiest one. Okay. So yeah, so the first one is very easy, right? Given that the block size is 64 byte, we just need to figure out that 2 to the power 6 is 64, and we need 6 bits of block offset. But then when we are trying to get the index, what does our formula say? In order to determine the number of index bits, we need to know how many sets we have in our set. And if you look at the information that we have here, we actually didn't say how many sets we have in our cache. But we actually have enough information to get the number of sets. How basically we will use this equation, which gives us the total size of the cache. So total, we have the total size. We know the associativity, which is here 8. We know the block size. So given that, we actually can figure out how many sets we have in our cache. And it's a simple formula. It's in bytes, so eventually the 32 kilobyte, you have to convert it to bytes. And then you get the number of sets we need, we have in this L1 cache. After that, it's pretty easy. Like 64 is again 2 to the power 6, so we need 6 bits for index. And you do the procedure multiple times for L2 and L3. For L2, the size is 256 kilobyte. It has 8 associativity. For L3, 8 megabyte, 16 associativity. So from that information, we get how many sets we have in our cache, and then use that to get the number of index bits. So once you have done all the math, we end up with this. Like you can see that these are the number of sets, number of bits in the offset, number of index bits, and rest of that is tag. So once we know that, then we can take an address and split it into our tag, index, and offset. And suppose we have these address in hexadecimal, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and we want to split it in our TIO. And the simplest way to do it is we write it down as in binary, and then we take out the bits that we need for each of these. So the first one, we need 6 bits for our offset. So the lower order 6 bits, that becomes our offset. We take the binary, and now you can just convert it to hexadecimal or decimal, whatever suits for you. So you can see that it's 10 and 0111, which is basically in hexadecimal 2 and 7. For index bits, it's different for L1, L2, and L3. So that one will be, even the block offset is the same for all the levels, then we need to calculate the index bit for each of them differently. So for L1, we have 6 to 11 for set index, and basically we take out these bits and convert it to hexadecimal. And rest of the bits, they just go to our tag, I guess we all know that. So for L2, it's the similar procedure. We just take out these middle 10 bits, and that becomes our index. And rest of the bits, we eventually get the tag. And similar for L3. So any question regarding this, like given an address, how to determine the index, offset, and tag? Okay. So I guess we will have a lab regarding this, so it will get more clear, even if it's not clear right now. So now let's move to types of cache misses. There are 3 types that we will talk about, and one we actually already have seen. But let's start with the first one. The first one is compulsory miss or cold miss, which is whenever we are accessing something for the first time. That's the first time we haven't seen it before, so it's a compulsory miss, and we have to fetch that thing from memory and put it in our cache. So because that's the design principle of cache, that we only bring cache blocks into cache once the program has accessed it. So it's just the basic principle that whenever we are accessing a memory location for the first time, there is no way we can avoid that. So it doesn't matter how big the cache is or how many ways we have, that would always be a compulsory miss. The second one, conflict miss, that one we actually saw before. We can have a conflict miss when the sets are just not big enough to hold all these blocks. So for example, if it was a fully associative cache, if we have just one set where all the blocks could be placed anywhere within that set, we have the full flexibility. And if it's not fully associative and we have some associativity, 8-way or 4-way, there would be cases where it's a miss with 8-way cache. But if it was a fully associative cache, we could have avoided that. So that's the one we call a conflict miss, where a fully associative cache of the same size would have done better. Any question regarding this?
Does that mean that a fully associative cache won't have conflict
miss? It won't have conflict miss. So that's the way we are defining that. So for example, if we had a 32 kilobyte cache with some associativity, then that means that there might be, let's take 4 associativity. There are just 4 slots we have in one specific set. And if I have 10 blocks in my memory which maps to the same set, then we always will have a conflict. But if given the limited size of the cache, the highest number of ways we can have is only by fully associative cache. So if we can avoid a conflict miss in that cache, that means that it was a, if it was not a miss with a fully associative cache, we will call it a conflict miss for some associative cache. So you can think about a cache configuration where it is fully associative and still you just don't have enough space to put it. But that's basically kind of the capacity miss, which we will just like talk later. So it's just basically, it's not having more flexibility, it's just you don't have enough capacity. So that's what we call a capacity miss. So anything which is not the cold miss, and anything what we cannot avoid by having a fully associative cache, that just goes to capacity miss. Yes. Will we have a capacity miss when we have fully associative cache? Only for that? No. So for example, I guess, it's hard to call. So it's So if you increase the associativity, any miss you avoid is conflict if you keep the cache size the same. But if you increase the associativity, but you also increase the size of the cache, in that case you are actually avoiding both conflict miss and capacity miss. So I guess there is this ambiguity that what else you're keeping the same and what else you're changing. I guess we will actually see some examples regarding that too. Any question here? Okay. So once we go to associative cache, we talked about that there could be cases where all our ways are full. and suddenly we have a miss which maps to one specific set, and we need to evict something to make room for that cache, for that cache block. So for example here, it maps to the same set 0 where both of the ways have already some valid block there. So we need some kind of policy to determine which of the block we want to evict and replace it with our new block. And there are many different policies which we can use for cache replacement. But the one which is most popular is least recently used cache policy. Basically, it builds upon our locality intuition. So in the cache, we just predicted that anything we have accessed recently is more important than anything we accessed earlier. So that's why whenever we want to replace something, we want to replace the block which is the least recently used one. So because we just have two ways, we need some metadata to say that which one was least recently used. And here we can have just one bit to say that which way was least recently used. If it's one, so if we access way one, the least recently used one becomes the zero way. If we access the zeroth way, then the least recently used one becomes the way one. And at least for this cache, we can have one extra bit which says which one is the least recently used one. But you can see that this is a bit that needs to be updated at every access. So if we have more than two set associative cache, that means that we may need more bits to keep this replacement information. One simple way is if we have four-way associative cache, you keep two bits to say that which way is the least recently used. But we can actually come up with some compact encoding. I will not go through how we do that, but this is, so if we want to design a very optimal encoding to keep the information that which block is the least recently used one, we can use this many bits, but then it becomes a bit more complex. In hardware, we want to keep things as simple as possible. So usually we use some approximation of least recently used policy and try to minimize the number of bits we need to keep in our metadata. But that's one policy. You can come up many different policies to decide which one you want to evict. Another simple one is first in, first out, whichever we used now, that should have higher priority, and whichever was brought in the cache first should go out first. It's simple FIFO policy. Also, we could say that we don't want to use any metadata for our cache at all. It's just too much to have metadata for replacement policy. And in that case, we can just randomly evict some block from from that set. So that's also a possibility. And we have found out that you may think that the random policy doesn't work at all, but apparently it provides, it's not that bad, it's actually moderately good. And the reason is whenever we are writing our applications, the access pattern varies a lot. And the simple policies like this, LRU or FIFO, they may not be able to catch the access pattern that the application has. And in that case, randomly evicting one provides somewhat better performance. But when we are designing replacement policies, we try to think about what's the cost of that policy, how much metadata we have to keep, and what's the benefit that we are getting out of that policy. So random, it has no overhead at all, but it provides somewhat moderate benefits. So in that sense, it is a reasonable choice. Yes? So here you can see that how many bits we need per set. So the situation I was talking about, there we were keeping some metadata for every block. In that case, you can go with log of the associated with it, that number of bits. But you can make it more compact if you try to keep so I guess the next version would be if you keep one bit for each blocks in the set, but then you can't just do it with one bit because you're keeping an ordering of all the blocks you have. So then you actually go to the encoding. Do you want to explain it or just?
Yeah, so I think a thing people get confused by is you need to keep the order because when you know what's least recently used now, you replace it, now you need to know what's least recently used after I do that. So you need an ordering. And that upper that bound there is their e factorial permutations of the e weights. So you could just number all the permutations, which is probably not what you do in hardware because that's really annoying to like figure out how to update, but that's clearly the best you could possibly do.
So when you have, so the reason that we don't want to use some bits for each block because when you have to, you access something and now your ordering changed. And if you have some metadata with every block, that means that you have to access every block in your cache and change the ordering. So that's a huge overhead. So that's why we try to do something where we can just change the ordering once. So in that case, it's better to have some metadata which represents the ordering for the whole cache instead of having par block metadata. So I guess it is all the trade-off. It's the trade-off between complexity and how much benefit we have. So in that sense, in hardware, because we want things to be very simple, random seems a very reasonable option. But I guess nowadays, the replacement policies that we have in our cache, those are some approximation of LRU. Because of the complexity of LRU, it's not the real LRU. It's just somehow we approximate it with some numbers where we don't have to access every block in the set. Any more questions? Okay. So now let's do an exercise. So we have a cache which has 4-byte blocks, 2 sets, and 2-set associative. And the replacement policy here, we will use true LRU. Because we have just two ways, it's easier to do that. And again, with any kind of cache access, first we need to figure out what are the bits for our tag, offset, and index. And that one, I guess I will just give it to you here. So because we have 4-byte block, we need just 2 bits, and then we have 2 sets, we just need 1 bit, and then rest of them goes to tag. So now what I want to see is what happens if we have LRU replacement policy in our cache. So this is again an exercise. So remember that when both of the ways are valid and we want to fit some new block in our data, the least recently used one should get evicted. So you can do the exercise and talk with your neighbors. What about the first access? Hit or miss? So first one, it has to be missed because there is nothing in the cache, but I guess we have to go to our procedure that we look at the index, which says that we need to put it in our set 0, and there is no valid blocks there, so we just fetch the block and put it in the first way. Now for the second one, we see that the index is still the same, so it and the tag also matches, so it's a hit. Then for the third access, it again maps to set 0, but the tag is different than what we have in our cache. So it's a new block we are accessing. Again, it's a miss, and we bring it to our cache. And because now we have extra associativity, we put it in our way one. And you can see that for each access, we actually have to update the LRU state here. And here at the third access, because the recently accessed block is the one, the way one, way zero becomes the least recently used, so we update it. Then, I guess let's just go to this one. Like, okay, I guess we are here. The next block is, again, it maps to index 0, and we have to fetch that block. And this time we need to replace something. Okay, I guess the animation is slightly different. But so here we, I guess let's just be here. So we have to replace something. And what we see that given the information we have in the LRU metadata, it says that the one which is in way zero is the least recently used one. So in that case, we replace that one. We put the new block there. And now, because we just accessed the first way, the second one becomes the least recently used one, and we update it. Next one is that goes to the set one. We don't have any block there, so we don't have to make any decision about replacement. But the one here, the address 02. This one, you take a look at the index bits, and you see that this one is mapped to set 0. And again, we have a miss there. So now we again need to make a decision that which one we want to replace. We look at the LRU information and replace the one which is least recently used. I guess this is just a hit, so there we don't have to make any replacement decision. But the important thing here is every time we are updating our cache with hit or miss, we also update this LRU state so that when we are replacing something, we know which one to replace. Any question? So when we talked about accessing the cache so far, we didn't differentiate between read accesses and write accesses. But in reality, read and writes are slightly different, right? So for example, let's assume that we have a write access from CPU. So here, CPU says that write some value to this address A, B, C, D. So what are the options do we have? And for example, let's assume that this block is not present in our cache, so it's a cache miss. So what we could, if it's not in the cache, we need to make a decision about if we want to allocate in our cache or not allocate it. But I guess we will see it later. If it's a hit, we want to make a decision about should we update that value throughout our memory hierarchy or should we update the value just in one level. So let's see the first one that given an address and if it hits in the cache, what are the options we have? So we call these options write through and write back. So for example, if we decide that if we have a write access, we update the value here. So now our cache contains the new value, but this became inconsistent with memory because memory doesn't know about the new value yet. So we can make a decision that we will actually send the request, forward the request to memory, and we will make these memory and cache states consistent. So that is the option that we call write through, where the write is propagated at each level and all the value, all the new value that we have written in our variable that is consistent in both memory and cache. So in this case, the benefit is the same value in different levels, they are all consistent. But then we have to add these additional write accesses to our memory hierarchy to keep things consistent. So the other option could be that we have a write access. We see that it's a hit in the cache, so we update that cache block with the new value. But we decide that we don't want to introduce all these additional write through accesses throughout our memory hierarchy. But so now there is this inconsistency that cache contains this new value, but the memory is not consistent, it contains the old value. So what we do is when we are supposed to replace that block after some time, only then we send the request to memory to update the value in memory. So this is called the write back policy, where one, when we have the write access, we update only in the cache but not in the other parts of memory. We keep it in the cache, and at some point of time, because of some other accesses, we may have to replace it. So only at that time, we send a request to memory, a write request to memory, to update the value in other parts of memory. So now there is a question that when we are replacing the block, we need to know if it has been updated or it was just read all the time, so there is nothing to write back. So that's why we actually have to have some kind of metadata which says that if this block has been updated or not. So for write back access, suppose we have these access to cache, write access to cache, then we actually update it. And at some point of time, with some request from memory, we need to replace it. So what we do, we send a write request to memory, that value gets updated, and the new access that we have, which is replacing this old block that we fetch from memory and put it in this place. So what's the benefit here? The benefit is we don't have to introduce all these extra write-through requests for write-backs. And the disadvantage is now we need to keep this extra metadata to indicate if a block has been updated or not. Yes.
Because we're reading the new value and updating the old one from memory, does that mean that it would take less time to do those two operations at the same time? Accessing memory, like at the same time, to do both things.
Compared to what? I guess that's
reading only and then writing at a later time.
So usually memories have multiple ports for reading and writing. So if we do it at the same time, it's kind of pipeline. So yes, the latency should be lower. But the main performance benefit comes from not introducing all these extra requests we need to have for write through. So for example, usually we have three levels of cache and we write something at L1. That means that we need extra three accesses to L2, L3, and memory to make it all consistent. Yes.
So would the metadata that says whether or not it's up to date, would that only, if you had like a multiple layer cache, would that only contain the information about whether it's up to date with the previous layer or with all the other layers?
So it will contain information only for that cache. So for example, if it's L1, we will just keep the information about the blocks in L1, which one is dirty, which one is not. So when I replace something from L1, I see that it's dirty, then I send another write request to L2. And now L2 has a new write request, and it needs to update its metadata, saying that I have written to this block, so make the dirty bit 1. So for each level, there is this extra metadata to track that information. So here I'm showing that we have this one extra bit for each block, which says if it has been updated or not. And if it's when we are replacing some block and if we find that it's dirty, it has to be written back. So that's the policy for write back. So then I said that there are two decisions. The other decision is, suppose we have a write access and it's a miss. So now we have this option about what we do on this write miss. So should we allocate a whole block in the cache and update the portion that we just accessed? Or we should just send the write request to memory instead of allocating some space in the cache. So the first option, where we don't have, so we received the write request and we allocated a block in our cache and updated it, we call it write allocate. Basically, we issue a miss request for that block. We fetch that block from memory. Once it's in the cache, we replace the part where we are updating it. The other option is we will just won't allocate any block. We won't fetch the whole block from memory. Instead, we will just send a write request to the next level of memory. And so in that case, we are avoiding this extra read from memory to bring that block. And for write allocate, the benefit is once we have the whole block and we updated it, it might happen that because of locality, we may be accessing that block again. So in that case, just fetching the block and keep it in the cache provides us more benefit. So based on locality, write allocate should be better. But if there is no locality in our cache at all, in our application at all, then write no allocate makes more sense. In general, I think nowadays we have write allocate, write back policy mostly.
It depends on the level.
Okay, I guess that's true.
And issues we want to talk about in the future.
Yes. So I guess let's just go through an example to see that how the write allocate works. So we are writing some value to address 0x04, so it's in hexadecimal, and it maps to set 0. And if we match the tags, we see that this is not a block that's present in the cache, so it's a cache miss. And because we are writing it, now with write allocate, we are saying that first we will fetch the whole block from memory and then update it with our new value. So here, first thing to do is we find which block we want to replace. So that's the least recently block. And we find that this is actually a dirty block. So what we have to do is, first we have to write back this block. Then we read the new block from memory and get the value for it and update the LRU information. If it was write no allocate, what would have been done? So there would have been no read access to memory. We won't do anything even in the cache. So we will say that it's a cache miss. Okay, just send the write request to memory and update it in memory. So is the trade-offs clear? So here we avoid the read one extra read access with write no allocate. With write allocate, we have to do some additional accesses. We have to write back data if it's dirty. We have to bring data, the new data, and put it in the cache. But then this may help us with our locality because if we wrote to something, most likely we will write to the neighboring bytes. So it's better to just allocate it and bring fix the block. So even though we just talked about only write allocate, write no allocate, and write back when write through, usually what we do is when we are writing something, we actually have some extra buffer in our cache, which whenever we have write request, we put it in that structure, and that takes care of our writes. So it's not on the critical path in a sense that we don't have to wait until the write has completed to the cache, if it's write through to the memory, we just put it in our write buffer and assume that the write request has completed and the processor can move on with doing whatever it was doing. So this is more like a fast path we have so that we can improve the performance. Was there any question? So now we kind of talked about all the design decisions we can make for caches. But when we are, so for example, someone at Intel is deciding that how we should design the cache configuration for some processor, and there are multiple options. Like we can have different size, cache size, different block size, different associativity, different levels, different replacement policies. So, and these all have different impact on the performance. So when they're trying to design the cache configuration, what they do is usually they just take a set of workloads which represents the real workloads. And then they build some simulator where it can simulate what happens if we have different size of cache block, different size of cache size, and different replacement policies. So they try to figure out that given the search space, how does it impact the performance? So for example, here we will see that how the miss rate changes, if we have different size of cache and different associativity. And the numbers are, the numbers here we are seeing is for some specific benchmark suite that usually is used for this kind of microarchitecture stuff. So here, let's, I guess we have two fixed parameter. The block size and the replacement policy is fixed. And we are changing two things. We are changing the cache size and we are changing the associativity. So first thing you can see that if we go column-wise, when we are increasing the cache size, miss rate goes down. And it's true for all the associativity configuration we have. Like for direct map, we started with 8% and eventually we went to 0.2%. But the interesting here is we see that there is a diminishing return. So when we went from 1 kilobyte to 2 kilobyte, there was a high jump, a high decrease in the miss rate. But when we are going from 64 kilobyte to 128 kilobyte, the change is not that significant. And mainly the reason is it depends on the working set of our workloads. So if the cache is too small, then we have many misses. Capacity miss, conflict miss. Once we start to increasing the cache size, most of the data we are accessing is already residing in the cache. So at some point, even if we increase the cache size, usually whatever we are accessing, it's already there. So we don't get more benefit by, so for example, from 128 kilobyte, maybe I want to have an 8 megabyte cache, but that will provide no extra benefit if everything I'm accessing is already in the cache. So I guess that's one thing. Then if we go row-wise, so given one cache size, if we increase the associativity, we also see this diminishing return. So from direct map to 2A, I guess let's take the cache size 1 kilobyte, there was some, at least some significant improvement, but once we are going to 8-way to fully associative, like here the difference is really small, they're like 0.0 something percent. So again, having associativity from direct map is providing better performance, but once we are getting to more flexibility, usually we have already reduced our conflict misses, so getting to fully associative doesn't give us that much benefit. And remember that there is this cost involved. Like fully associative caches, they are more complex. So if we are implementing, which is more complex, but doesn't give us that much benefit, most likely it's not a good trade-off. Any question here? So given a cache configuration, if we want to reason about what would be the performance of the cache, we need to look at these parameters. There are four parameters. The first one is heat time, which says that how much time it takes to look up the cache and find the value in the cache. So usually if the cache is bigger, it takes more time to look it up. For L1, typically we want it to be around one cycle, so with each cycle the processor can do something. Then the second parameter we are concerned is called miss rate. Basically it's the fraction of the accesses that are missing the cache. Miss penalty is the extra time that we need to get a value from the next levels of memory hierarchy. So if we have a miss, that block is not present in the cache, so we need to fetch it from some other level. So it's the time that it takes to bring that cache block. So suppose if we had a miss at L1 and the block is in L2, the penalty would be lower compared to if we had to go to all the way to memory and bring that block. So when we talk about miss time, it's actually the heat time plus miss penalty. As first we need to figure out it's a cache heat or cache miss, and in order to do that we have to look up the cache. So that's why miss time is heat time, and then the time we have to, if it's a miss, the time we have to fetch the block from the next level. And if we want to reason about what's the average memory access time, that's basically the time it takes, the heat time, and then it's the miss penalty multiplied by miss rate. So that basically says that the fraction of misses we have, for those we have to pay this miss penalty, and for all the other, for all requests, if it's hit or meet, we actually have to pay this heat time. So that basically says what's the effective speed or speed of memory, what's the average access time for any access in our cache. So if we want to reduce the average memory access time, we can try to reduce the heat time or miss penalty or miss rate. So we have three options. I guess, so if we can reduce the miss rate, maybe by using higher associativity, so that will reduce the miss rate. We can use more levels in the cache to reduce the miss penalty. And in order to reduce the heat time, we actually have to reduce the size of the cache. So again, there are all these design parameters that people take into account to decide what kind of cache they want to have. So one specific thing that we should keep in mind is whenever we're trying to reason about the performance of the cache, we are thinking about typical programs with locality. But you can always come up with a very specific case, pathological case, where the program has no locality at all and the cache will perform very poorly. But that's like the pathological rare case. Usually with real programs that wouldn't happen. So one example of this case could be that we first access a bunch of data and fill our cache, And then once we have filled the cache, we access something that needs to replace some block. So we replace one block and place the new block. But then we just keep accessing the block that we just replaced. So it's a pathological case that everything we access, we just replace it. So it's like all the accesses will become a miss. So this could be a case where we come up with an access pattern that doesn't have any cache hit. But when we are reasoning about the average case, we won't think about these pathological cases. We will assume that this is real programs which have some locality in it. So let's now try to reason about the cache performance with that in mind, that we are talking about programs with locality. So we want to determine that what happens to these three parameters when we change different parameters in our cache. So remember that average time is heap time, then added miss rate multiplied by miss penalty. So if we increase the cache size, that definitely makes the miss rate better because now we can put more things in the cache. But then the heap time gets worse because it takes more time to access or look up the cache if it's bigger. If we increase the associativity, definitely we will reduce the conflict miss, so we will have better miss rate. But with more associativity, we need to read out more things, match more things, so it will make the heap time worse. If we increase the block size, then eventually makes the cache bigger, so heap time gets worse, but depending on how we access our locality, it depends what will happen to the miss rate. Then for write allocate and write back, so as I said, with write allocate and write back, we fetch some data, which is an extra read. But eventually, if the program has locality, it should help with anything where we read data after a write. So the miss rate should be better. LRU replacement, instead of some very simple replacement, it should avoid some misses, so it should be better. But I guess here, so here, this is the one which is we haven't talked about. So that is what happens if we add one extra level of cache. So we have L1 and memory. What happens if we introduce L2? So basically, it makes the miss penalty lower because now instead of going to the memory, we have something in between which may have our block that we are trying to look up. So that makes the miss penalty better. For others, whenever there is a question mark, the answer is okay, it depends what happens, but most likely it will make it worse or better. Any question here? So now we want to look at what happens when we change these parameters, but what's the effect on different types of miss? So here we have capacity miss, conflict miss, and compulsory miss. And we want to say what happens if we change the cache size, associativity, and block size. And we want to reason about it, thinking that the rest of the other parameters is remaining constant. So if we increase the cache size, that definitely would help with capacity and conflict miss. But for compulsory, it's like it depends on the application. Whatever we access for the first time, it will be a cold base, so nothing we could do about that. For associativity, it won't help with capacity miss, but if we, it will avoid some conflict misses, so conflict miss will better. Now think about if we increase the block size. I think that's the main thing here. So first, if we increase the block size, it should help with our compulsory miss because something, because of spatial locality, it could happen that I brought the block for the first byte, but then for the rest of the bytes, it's now already in the cache. It makes sense, but you can see that it can increase the conflict miss. Why is that? Anyone wants to volunteer? Yes.
Because it's more likely the two things which are close together will map to the same set.
If things closer to each other can map to the same set. I guess, yeah, so, okay. So why that will happen? It will happen because we are saying that we are keeping the cache size constant. So all the other things are constant. So now if we increase the block size, we have to decrease the associativity. So that can lead to the fact that we will have more conflict misses. Is that right?
Decrease the number of sets.
Yes. So we have to decrease the number of sets. So now there are more things which go to the same set, which increases the conflict. So this is actually a very important thing to keep in mind, that when we ask about what would be the performance of changing some parameter, usually it could be the case that we are saying keep the cache size constant, and in that case increasing something means that eventually you will increase the cache size. But if we don't say that, if the cache size is the same but we are changing some parameter, they will affect each other. If we increase the block size, we have to decrease the number of sets. If we increase the associativity, we have to reduce the number of sets. So they are all correlated. So keeping that in mind, let's go through this example where we say that initially we have a cache which has 64 byte blocks, 64 sets, and 8-way set associativity. And if we leave these parameters the same and just change one thing, what will happen to our capacity miss? So if we take the first one, we are multiplying the block size by 4. But here, cache size is not relevant. That means that changing the block size, we actually increase the cache size too. So whenever we are increasing the cache size, definitely it will reduce the capacity miss. If we change the number of sets, but we increase the size, total size of the cache, that will also reduce the capacity miss, and similar thing. So it's just the way we have asked the question, but typically, when we are trying to reason about the cache, we may assume that the cache size is constant, and we are trying to reason about what happens we change associativity versus number of sets. So here, we are saying that it's kind of the same question, but slightly different. The cache configurations are the same, but we are saying that we want to keep the total size the same. And now, when we change the size of the block size is 4x of this one. So So we have to, if we have to keep the size of the cache the same, we have to change something else. So we changed the block size, now we have the number of ways is still the same, so eventually we have to reduce how many sets we have in the cache. So in that case, now you need to reason about what should be, like, which one of these would be reduce the number of capacity ways. I guess I will give you 2 minutes. Any volunteer? Yes.
Only C would
increase. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's like not, once I say that what's happening with the cache size, it's pretty intuitive, right? If A and B, they change something, but at the same time they don't change the number, the size of the cache. So definitely it cannot reduce the capacity means. But if we change the cache size, but keep the number of ways associated with n block size, we still have a bigger cache, so it will reduce the capacity ways. I guess this one I will just leave you for your exercise. I want to go through, let's go through this example. So till now we didn't see any real application, but now we will try to go through some toy examples and see that how that affects the cache. So here we have an array and it's accessing the even elements and the odd elements and adding them in this variable. So what we want to know that given a 2 kilobyte direct map cache and 16 byte of cache block, how many cache misses we will have. So the things we want to focus is the size of the whole array is 4 kilobyte. Our cache is only 2 kilobyte. And each time when we access a block, we will bring 16 bytes of data. So it could happen that the first element we access, that's a miss, but the next elements will become a hit. And each time we bring a cache block, we access the first element and second element, the even and odd. Any volunteer? So basically, we want to reason about the access pattern. When we bring in the first block, I guess let's just go through the array. So we will assume that we have an empty cache, nothing is there, and only this array, we put it in the cache, and it starts from the zeroth address in our cache. So when I is equal to zero, we have a miss because that block is not there. So we bring in the block, and see that the block is 16 bytes. Our integer is only 4 bytes, so we can hold 4 integers in one cache block. So this one, when we this array 0, that will be a miss, but this odd one, array 1, that will be a hit. Now when I equal to 1, then we already brought that block into our cache. So that will be again a hit. a 1 plus 1 dot index 2, that would be also a hit. So if you think about it, each time we are bringing a block, we have a miss at every fourth element, because the cache can just hold 4 elements. So eventually, with the number of misses we will have is the size of the cache divided by the size of the cache box. I guess let's go through the example in the next class. Thank you.